Chris Carter here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We've got Adam Bittner on, and we're going to talk about not just the Cameron Sutton suspension, but the overall place of where we see the Steelers cornerbacks here on the in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, because that's going to be a big part of what's expected to be better about this defense in 2024. That and baseball talk on how Rowdy Tellez is picking it up with Noah Hyles, all here in an action-packed episode of the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Adam Bittner, and we are both from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You can subscribe there at post-gazette.com to get all of our written work. You can also subscribe to this podcasting channel wherever you get podcasts, and especially here on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of the daily content that comes out from all of our Post-Gazette writers, as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday of episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar is going to let you try one of 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers from the local Pittsburgh area and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. It's the best bar in Pittsburgh for a reason. They have a lot of great experiences. They're on the North Shore. We'll get more on them later. Adam, wanted to dive into you about this Cam Sutton situation and how the Steelers cornerbacks look. But I think before we talk about Cam Sutton, it's important to acknowledge that, like, we all knew that a suspension was coming at some point. The question would be how long would it would be, when they would dish it out. But now that it's out the way, Cam Sutton's not appealing it. It's an 8-game suspension. It's not a surprise. And I think, as Paul Zeiss wrote for us this week too, it's kind of like, it's kind of just puts the Steelers back at where they were, which was still needing to figure out what their cornerback situation would even look like this year, for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I think they must have at the beginning of this made some level of a bet that they can weather the storm with what they have going on. We've talked so much on this show and on my show with Paul about how backloaded the schedule is, you know, especially with the division games, the Chiefs, all that. So I think they're making some level of a bet that they like what they have in their room, and they think, at least going into training camp, and you know, the preseason training camp can change everything, but they feel like they can do well enough to then get Cam Sutton in the back half and really, hopefully be in their case, be stronger and solid, you know, going into the tough part of their schedule.
I think that's going to be the schedule is something we're going to talk about in the next segment, but I think that's going to be interesting to see how this unit grows. But ultimately, this is going to be a group led by Joey Porter Jr., a guy who had a really strong rookie season. I believe he had the lowest completion percentage of anyone targeted over 50 times in the NFL last year, especially among rookie cornerbacks in a strong rookie cornerback class. He only got one interception, but he had 6 passes broken up. But now he's had a year to kind of get his feet settled. He's had time to figure out, maybe adjust his body a little bit. He won't have had to come off of training for, you know, like being a college football player, then training from the combine, then, you know, adjusting to the NFL and trying to earn a start in the NFL. Now you can just focus on, hey, I am a starter in the NFL and I'm expected to be a cornerback one. I think that's a huge part of the expectations here, is for him to take away the other team's number one receiver more times than not. When I asked Terrell Austin directly about that in Steelers mini camp, he didn't really answer affirmatively that it was definitely the plan, even though Joey Porter Jr. said his aim is to cover every number one wide receiver for the Steelers, throughout the season. But Terrell Austin said it's going to be based more on matchups. We don't want to commit to that. But I think a big part of, you know, the fall of the Cam Sutton situation, which again we knew was coming, is the Steelers, I think, can feel like they have two guys that they can at least expect to play at an NFL level in Porter and Dante Jackson, who they traded for from the Panthers. And, you know, Dante Jackson, the guy that didn't have great numbers last year, but now he's not being asked to be the number one corner like he was last year for the Panthers. And before he was asked to be the number one corner, he was really good for them. I just think that there's a question of, and there's a lot of excitement about depth, right? Like, everyone's excited to see Corey Trice if he can stay healthy, because he was looking really good in training camp last year. And he was one of those late round picks from last year that everyone thought, even like national experts thought, he could be really good. Then there's also Darius Rush. There's an influx of young guys, including Beanie Bishop, an undrafted free agent out of West Virginia. that I think gets excitement, but there's a lot of unproven stuff about this cornerback group. And I think that's the issue the Steelers could run into, is if not enough of these guys turn from question marks into exclamation points, this could be a liability again, even though it's been invested in to not be a liability at this point.
Yeah, Chris, I think, you know, part of what the Steelers want to accomplish here is finding out if these guys can actually play, right? And we've talked about, you know, the depth that they represent or possible depth that they represent, but you're not really going to know until you put them in game situations. I think, you know, ideally, if you're the Steelers, these guys will play well enough that maybe you don't need Cam Sutton by the end of this. And Cam Sutton can be looked at more like an insurance policy, especially in that back half of the season, than maybe the plan. And I think you look at the way the Steelers valued cornerback in the draft, the way they approached it in free agency after the Dante Jackson situation, you say they must feel pretty confident with this group. And these first eight games are a matter of getting it off podcasts where we talk about it all the time and actually seeing it play out on the field. So that's, you know, I think I look at it somewhat as an opportunity for them to really see what they have. Obviously, you'll get to do that a little bit in the preseason, but we all know how the preseason is just the preseason. And when the games really start to count, who can step up and play well, whether it's Darius Rush, Corey Trice, Ryan Watts, potentially in some kind of hybrid role, that's what I'm looking at.
I agree. I think that's the thing, is that we're wondering who steps up there. But here's my thing. If nobody steps up, especially in the slot cornerback role, because I do feel like Dante Jackson will at least be an NFL caliber, starting cornerback. And I mean, we saw with Patrick Peterson and Levi Wallace, you know, an old Patrick Peterson and Levi Wallace last year, they were able to kind of keep things together, you know, at the cornerback position. I think Dante Jackson, you know, he's faster. I think he's a better player than Levi Wallace. I think that, you know, with his youth will put him over what Patrick Peterson was for the Steelers last year. If he just does what he's expected to do at the number two spot, the biggest question then becomes about slot corner. And here's my thing. With all the guys they have that are like, you know, young veterans that they've brought to the team on super cheap contracts, guys like Beanie Bishop, who looked really good in OTAs and minicamp, if none of them works, there's still a guy that they had last year on the roster, that position, Shannon Sullivan, who's a free agent right now. And I've said this in other places. I'm like, I thought they were going to bring him back because he would cost you nothing. And he was pretty decent there. He wasn't amazing or anything. He wasn't lights out. He wasn't like, you know, Mike Hilton when he was with the Steelers. But you could put Shannon Sullivan in the slot, and he was one of the guys that you were actually not worried about giving up the big play. In fact, he helped, you know, kind of limit other big plays. So I think they have multiple routes here to figure out what they want to do at cornerback. It's just going to be about who steps up, and then how does Omar Khan respond to the first couple weeks of training camp.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even with a guy like Shannon Sullivan, I think the calculus is they know what they have in him, right? And you don't necessarily know what you have in these other guys. And maybe that's what they want to prove the thesis that, you know, these tall, lengthy corners with some speed, these guys that have really been an Omar Khan project here for the past couple of years, that theory is going to play out. And maybe you can find a solid number two on these cheap deals and really save a bunch of money. Because, you know, that's always in the background, Chris, right? Is how do you manage the salary cap? Where are you spending your money? And we know the Steelers are spending their money in a lot of somewhat unconventional places. You know, you think about safety with Minkah Fitzpatrick. They're putting a lot of money there that a lot of other teams aren't. And so if you're looking at the secondary as a whole, if you can get a longer term number two out of this group of guys and not have to pay him a whole lot for a few years, that can really make a big difference, you know, in how you manage the team. So I think that's part of the calculus here. I think some fans probably will not love to hear that. They want to get the best players in the best positions. But, you know, salary cap management's always in the background. So you've got to give these guys opportunities to know, you know, what they can do.
Absolutely. I want to talk about some of the units that they're about to face this year, too, because part of this is who do these corners line up against as far as receivers and quarterbacks that they face. We'll delve into that more here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Adam Bittner. But first, we'll remind you, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar is on the North Shore. It's right across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street. It's a perfect place to go before, during, after Pirates games, whether they're home or away. And it's an awesome place because they have over 500 different available beers, 300 of those beers from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And when you're there, They have over 20 televisions that you can check out whatever sporting events you want. With the Olympics coming up, it could be a perfect place to watch the Olympics in Paris over the rest of this summer. And it's a great place. You can sit outside, get a view of downtown while also seeing all the traffic around the North Shore. It's an amazing place with also great food. You get steak on a stone where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut up a piece, just press it into the stone, choose how well done you want every single bite, and you can enjoy a lot of the great things at Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. Go there today, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Adam Bittner. Let's get into some of the teams that they're facing this year. And some of these could be really tricky, Adam, because there's obvious ones like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce that's going to be a major challenge. But, and then there's of course the Bengals with Joe Burrow back and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. So there's obvious ones there, but there's also other ones that could end up being a problem if they kind of hit it off. Like you got the Falcons in week one. They've got Kirk Cousins now, along with Drake London, Kyle Pitts in a group in an offense that Arthur Smith, the Steelers offensive coordinator, was trying to get to go last year. And now with a quarterback, maybe it will. You got the Chargers with Justin Herbert. You've got Anthony Richardson back with the Colts, and he has Michael Pittman and the guy from Texas that they drafted. The Cowboys were one of the top passing offenses last year. You still got Aaron Rodgers on the docket here. Is this maybe too big of a slate of talented quarterbacks and receiver groups, whether it's receiver and tight ends, you know, but is this a challenge that you think could end up being too big for what is still a question mark of a cornerback group?
I'm going to go with no, just because before we recorded the podcast, you told me what the topics would be today. I couldn't stop thinking about that Rams game last season where they went to LA. Puka Nacua murdered them, right? I think it was 154 yards, but they won in enough other places. You still hold that Rams offense to 17 points. Now, I know it's not like the Super Bowl Rams. They were not a very good team, but they had weapons, just like, you know, we're sitting here saying that this team's got weapons. This team's got weapons. The Steelers won in enough other places that day that the Rams still couldn't do much. Matthew Stafford didn't have a great day outside of Puka Nacua. So I think that's kind of the prototype here, right? Is yes, maybe sometimes we will lose that number two matchup. Maybe we'll lose that matchup in the slot. But, you know, we love what we have up front. We love our ability to shut down the run. We love our ability of our linebackers to kind of cover with Patrick Queen, Peyton Wilson, Landon Roberts, those guys, that you can still make things happen on the whole. So I think sometimes it's easy to kind of like narrow in on what is Dante Jackson doing in the number two spot and say that could be a problem. But I think if I'm a betting man, I'd say they look at that game and say we can replicate that consistently enough until Cam Sutton comes back, you know, on this front half of the schedule.
I think it's a very good observation by you about that Rams game because, Puka Nacua got 154 yards, but the guy that everyone was looking at, Cooper Kupp, he was caught 2 of 7 passes for 29 yards. And if you were to choose who was going to have the bigger day, you'd want it to be Puka Nacua because Cooper Kupp is one of the best receivers in the NFL. And I think it goes back to actually a question I asked Mike Tomlin at the beginning of the season. I think they were heading into their game against the Raiders. And I said, hey, Mike, you guys are giving up, I think he was either the most or one, some of the most receiving yards to wide receivers specifically in the NFL at that point. I was like, is that something that you guys are concerned about? And he was like, are we, but is our defense doing its job? And I was like, are we keeping points off the board? And I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, well, that's all I care about. And that's the bottom line here is that especially when there are personnel shortages, there are strategic ways in how to win, like you said, in other facets of the game that could kind of make up for liabilities in certain parts. And I think that's something the Steelers have done very well over the past 4 to 5 years. It's why they've not had a losing record, is they've been able to find these mismatches and kind of cover them up more often than not. And it's been tough for them to kind of exploit their own mismatches because you know, a lot of teams have been strong in different areas, and the Steelers have been rebuilding. And that's where I think it could be if the Steelers do run into some of these matchups. And again, you look at this schedule, you got the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and that crew. You got the Falcons, we brought up the Chargers with Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, even Lamar Jackson. Even though I know that they do really well against Lamar Jackson, but Zay Flowers is going to be in his second year. They could be doing something there. Amari Cooper is a very good receiver for the Browns. In the Eagles with Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. This is not going to just be a bunch of bad teams that they're going to get to line up against, especially when it comes to throwing the football. So they're going to need to be ready. But I also think that with the potential that this cornerback group has, with Joey Porter Jr., with Dante Jackson not having to be cornerback one, with the return of Cam Sutton when that gauntlet of AFC North team starts, I think that's another thing that the Steelers really lucked out on. Was, you know, at first everyone was saying, oh, it's really bad. It's good if they get Cam Sutton back and he is healthy for that second half run. I look at this and I think this could be one of the cruxes of the season, where if the Steelers cornerback room stands up to these groups, limits guys like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, limits guys like A.J. Brown, who ate them alive when they last played just a couple years ago. If they do those types of things, these games become so much more interesting. And if the offense, and we've talked a lot about the offense, if the offense is just middle of the road with Russell Wilson, the new offensive coordinator, and the investments they've made on the offensive line, that could make for a very competitive football team. And if they do that, that's where I think that they could be really special. And a lot of it depends on how these corners run with these receivers and try to make plays on the football when the quarterbacks are trying to get aggressive.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that, you know, they're not gonna solve the problem every week, right? It's the NFL. Other teams are going to exploit them. But the question is, can you do it often enough, you know, to put yourself in a position at midseason where when you get Cam Sutton back and you're getting into that, you know, meat of the schedule, that you don't have to win, you know, 7 out of the last 8 games to make the playoffs, which is what they've done. And I think that's the big question, Chris, is how can they – will they start? And then will these guys step up early enough to make it, you know, so that they don't have to win that many games at the end of the season? Because I think if they do, unless there are injuries and, you know, those things always happen in the NFL, but then that's when it might get tough. But, they must be making the calculation that, yeah, we think we can win maybe 60% of those games in the first half and put ourselves in a good position, even if we have like an A.J. Brown game in Philadelphia that you referenced. I think those games are still going to happen, but I think that they think that they can win enough matchups often enough to be very good, in most games.
I think that's the bottom line. They don't have to be the best part of the defense, because again, this is a defense still with T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith, the best edge rushing duo in the NFL. If they're doing their job just enough, like solidly, that's the kind of stuff, also with the addition of Deshaun Elliott, that lets Minka Fitzpatrick go back and be Minka Fitzpatrick, or as he quote unquote said during minicamp, that's Minka ball, because he wants to go back to playing free safety, moving around, worrying about intercepting the football and trying to cross the wires up of the offense rather than trying to play in the slot, cover man-to-man, help in the box, attack the run. He wants to be that X factor in the deep part of the secondary that can create turnovers like he did 2 years ago when he had 6 interceptions. And if they are just solid to good, that could be the answer there. And it's funny, when you think back to even just like maybe 4 years ago when this defense was top 5 in back-to-back years, you know, they had Joe Hayden, they had Steven Nelson, they had Mike Hilton, they had Cameron Sutton as a fourth option. They were really deep back then. If they can get solid play from 3 to 4 guys this year, that might be all they need with the rest of the players on defense. Also with Patrick Queen added at linebacker, maybe the best linebacker they've had on this team since Ryan Shazier. So I think that like you're saying, they don't need to be lights out. They don't need to be, you know, Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman, Ty Law. They don't need to be none of those guys. They just need to be, don't get burnt all up and down the field, because that's what the Steelers cornerbacks used to be back, you know, back in the 2010s, while the offense was kicking butt, the cornerbacks were a problem. Just don't be a problem, and this defense goes a lot farther.
Yeah, I work in the analytics realm a fair amount during the season. I do the PFF grades, but I also work with the DVOA statistic, value over average. Usually it's more, you know, talked about in the offensive sense, right? But, you know, their theory over at Football Outsiders is that an average player can be a huge asset. And so if you just get average play out of those guys, right? Middle of the league, 14, 15, 16. If they're the 14, 15, 16th best corner group, but the rest of your defense is so much better, that's an asset and you can be a really solid defense. And I think that's a way to approach it is can you be average? And that doesn't sound good to a lot of people. They want them to be solid. They want them to be good. But that's, you know, you're competing against 31 other teams. Can you just be in the middle with that? And I think that's got to be the goal here in the first half is at least be there. And if you can be better, of course, you'd love to see them be better. But if you can meet that lower bar, I think it sets the defense as a whole up well.
Absolutely. Adam, thanks much for joining me here to talk Steelers and Steelers cornerbacks. We'll be back Friday talking more about the Steelers. But first, we got to talk Pirates because they got a big win on Tuesday with against the team that they're very much in contention with right now. I want to talk to Noah Hiles about Rowdy Tellez and other things to be excited about with the Pirates. That's next here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, now with Noah Hiles, one of our great Pirates beat reporters, who is on the road right now in Milwaukee covering the Pirates Brewers series. The Pirates were able to get a big win 12-2 at the offensive went alive last night on Tuesday. They played two more games Wednesday and Thursday with Skeen scheduled to take the mound Thursday afternoon on July 11th. But I wanted to talk to you, Noah, and lead off about Rowdy Tellez because he's kind of become a big part of the story of this team with the resurgence that he's had behind the plate. We talked a little about this on Monday when we were talking about trade candidates and what he could attract, but he's now gotten his batting average up to 249, which, you know, about a month and a half ago, that was unthinkable. Like, it was just like, well, this was just a terrible signing. The Pirates messed it up again, but he's batting 249, 304 on base percentage, 394 slugging, 698. On base and slugging, and he's got 8 home runs, and it seems like he's really picking up the pace. What's led to this resurgence from Rowdy Tellez?
Well, first things first, I got to point out of all the numbers, the most impressive is the OPS, the on base plus slugging. That was at one point down to like 430.
Oh boy,
that's a number that indicates overall how well you're hitting because it just shows how well you're getting on base, and then it takes into account your slugging, which means, are you just getting singles or are you hitting doubles? Are you getting extra base hits and how often are they coming? You know, and including home runs into that mix. And for him to now be at 698, that's about league average. This guy went from being the worst hitter in baseball for the first 2 months to a league average hitter on the season, essentially, in like 6 weeks. And so what leads to that change, Chris? I think it's just a little tweak in his stance. If you go back and watch some film, early in the season, Rowdy was lifting his front leg as the pitch was coming. That was his swing. He was kind of stepping into it. Now we've seen him kind of revert back to what he was doing earlier in his career when he was having success. He's just lifting his toe a little bit. It's called a toe tap rather than doing the high leg kick. And there's not a right way to go about it either way. Like, there's a lot of guys who will do it one way. There's a lot of guys who do it another way. There's a whole bunch of different ways to swing a baseball bat. But this little change that you've seen with Rowdy here in the last couple of weeks has produced results. And I think it's something familiar to what he was doing when he was playing the best baseball of his career, which actually, ironically enough, was played here in Milwaukee. So this change was a product of a conversation he had with a youth baseball coach of all people.
Interesting.
You know, when he had nobody else to turn to, that's who he reached out to. And he said, why don't you, you know, give this a try. And it's just something small and simple like that. And it's led to pretty big results. And I'm sure others had some role in it. I'm sure the Pirates hitting staff just didn't let him go into this all by himself. And they said, okay, well, if you're going to change this, let's work on these three things here. But the results show, and if you go and look at his game logs, Chris, from around the time that he started changing this, it was a gradual progression into what we're seeing him now as a power hitter. First, it was just good contact. He had a nice level swing, and it was a lot more singles. And then it was a lot more barrels, which produced doubles, harder contact, higher exit velocity. And then he can continue to tweak the launch angle a little bit. And now we're seeing the ball, rather than go line drive on a one hop into the outfield, we're seeing it go higher, as in to the outfield fence or over the outfield fence. And that's just the sign of a guy who's continued to improve at the plate over what has now been a 6-week stretch.
It's very interesting. And it's always interesting to me in baseball, like the smallest adjustment can lead to the biggest changes. It's why it's a fascinating sport to me whenever I see something like that. I also wanted to ask you about Quinn Priester because he's been brought up. He didn't start the game, but he came in there in the second inning and he went ballistic on the Brewers. And I think there's been, you know, years ago, there was this excitement for Quinn Priester, not like for Skeens, but for a lot of the minor league pitchers we've seen come out of the Pirates and people get excited for them. He was part of that next of the tie-on chain, and then it didn't really happen for him. But this was a good outing he had. What do you think this was something that he can sustain, or do you think this is more of a flash in the pan we're not going to see anymore of?
I think it could be. I mean, that's the other thing. For as much attention as Jared Jones and Paul Skeens get for being 22 and this good, Quinn Priester is only a year older than both of them. He's only 23 years old. So, like,
he's a baby.
You go and consider, I mean, it took Mitch Keller like 3 years to become just an average big league player. I think Quinn Priester has showed this season that he can be an above average player. I don't think he has the ceiling of a Mitch Keller, let alone a Paul Skeens or a Jared Jones. But I think that this is a big league starter for sure. I think part of the equation might be, as you pointed out, maybe this guy is just someone who needs an opener. I don't see that being there being anything wrong with that, with bringing out a left-handed pitcher to start the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way they load the lineup with right-handed batters. And then you bring Quinn in the second, and it's like, okay, now he gets all righty-righty matchups. So I think that that's one big thing. The thing that stood out to me with Priester yesterday was the ability to avoid the big inning. If you go back and look at his career, that's what's plagued him. It's not like he's a guy that allows 4 runs in one inning and 3 runs in another, or 3 runs in one inning and 3 runs in another. You know, all of his runs he allows typically come in one inning, and it's just being able to avoid a pitfall. And it's okay if you allow 2 runs in an inning. Like, that's totally acceptable if you're going to go 6-7 innings. It's where it gets him in trouble is where it gets to be 3 or more runs. And he had that situation in the bottom of the third yesterday where he allowed 2 runs. There were more runners on base. They had a mound visit, but he made the pitches he needed to make and he got through it. And that's a sign of progress, in my opinion, being able to say, you know what, I'm in a jam. And that's what stands out about Skeens and Jones so much, is when they have runners on base, they're able to, despite their youth, to make pitches, to get a ground ball for a double play, or to get an infield pop fly, or get a big strikeout. That's the test that every young pitcher has to go through. And we saw that from Quinn Priester. And it's not the first time we've seen it. He threw, I believe, 6 shutout innings in his second start of the season, or maybe his third start of the season. It was so long ago, against the Giants. I mean, he's looked solid here and there, but it's just putting it together with more consistency. And this is a guy that I think we'd be wrong to give up on, because as you mentioned, Carter, I mean, this is a top 100 prospect in baseball. This is a first round draft pick. This is a 23-year-old. And sure, he does not have the stuff of a Jared Jones, a Paul Skeens, or even a Bubba Chandler in the minor leagues. But this is a guy who could be an everyday big league pitcher. And when you consider what they have right now on the top of their 1-2-3, sure, it'd be nice to have another ace quality arm, but you don't necessarily need it. If you can get a guy who can go 6 innings and allow 3 runs pretty much every time, that's a pretty good starter for a back end rotation. And that's what I think Priester could be if they keep giving him opportunities.
I think that's very interesting. Another guy in the minors that you actually wrote about recently for our recruit, the minor league report that we do here at the Post Gazette, is Tamar Johnson. Another guy who Pirates fans have been excited about, but, you know, understandably waiting to see how he develops. You wrote about how he seems to be, you know, on the up and up. What's going on with Tamar Johnson that you like?
I mean, first thing with Tamar, I mean, this kid's a baby. He's 20 years old. Right. Like, it's going to be a little bit before we really see him get close to the big league level. What's going on with Tamar is he's still figuring out this game as a pro. This is his second professional season. There are some things that stand out well with him. I mean, you've got to like how he can barrel a baseball. You got to like his overall patience at the plate, I would say. He does a really good job of watching a lot of pitches. A lot of guys with his talent and his at his age are probably overly aggressive. I would argue that he's probably in the opposite camp, where he is a little too passive. Maybe he sees things too well, and he's just got to say, you know what, screw it. You don't need to hit the perfect pitch. If you can just foul some off and keep this bat alive, you're fine. But he's just been heating up, and this is something similar to what we saw last year around this time. He did not play well in the first couple of months of last year's season, and then in the second half in Bradenton, he really got going. So I just look at this is a big thing for the Pirates, because they clearly do not have a lot of hitters right now in their farm system, and right. Getting him going and continuing his development, it's either going to lead to a valuable big leaguer in the form of Tamar Johnson in a couple of years, or maybe a valuable trade asset in, you know, the near future. So either way, that's good for the Pirates.
Absolutely. Getting back into the series right now, two more games against the Brewers, and that will end the 10-game stretch that we talked about a couple weeks back, or maybe even last week. But they went 1-2 against the Cardinals. They split 2-2 against the Mets, and they're now 1-0 against the Brewers. So they have a chance here to kind of save this 10-game stretch if they're able to finish strong against the Brewers here. They've got Perez and Skeens on the mound in the coming days. What do you expect to see, the big points that you're looking for in these upcoming games?
I mean, these are big baseball games, Carter. Mm-hmm. And if they can take one more here in Milwaukee and then go for a sweep in Chicago, which is not unreasonable considering how bad the White Sox are. I mean, mm-hmm. they should sweep them. If you can do that, you're, I believe, 500. So, I mean, that's what you would want at the All-Star break. I think anyone would have signed up for that, despite, you know, the notion that this team probably should be well above 500 when you consider how many winnable games they've blown this mm-hmm. year. To get to 500 with, you know, guys coming back off the IL in late July, there's a reason to continue believing. There's a reason to add rather than subtract from this roster. That's a good thing, but you got to go out and do it. Martin Perez looked really good in his last outing. He's got to do it again. He can't afford to go out here and get rocked like he did the last time he pitched in Milwaukee. Paul Skeens, I mean, I don't know what you really want from him. Like, he's doing
it.
A bad game. Let's keep it that way if you're the mm-hmm. Pirates. Right. And then, you know, you got to make the most of your opportunities in Milwaukee. The problem sometimes with the Pirates' bats has been putting together two good days in a row. They did that. They scored 8 runs on Monday. They scored 12 runs on Tuesday. But they can't cool down. You can't get shut out or only have one run in 9 innings tonight. You've got to keep hitting the baseball. You've got to keep manufacturing runs. And these are some simple but very important keys if you want to see them play their way back. Because, you know, you mentioned they went 3-4 in that homestand. They probably should have gone 5-2. They lost the game in extra innings to the Cardinals, and mm-hmm. they lost the game in the bottom of the ninth or in the top of the ninth to the Mets, who were down to their final strike, and Lindor hit that 2-run single to give them a lead. So, you know, those are tough games where their season looks a lot different if they won both of those or even one of those two games. So now you've got to take another from the first place Brewers, and you've got to really beat up on this struggling White Sox team before the All-Star break.
It's going to be interesting to see, but you can follow all of that action and how they do by subscribing to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and all the great coverage that comes from Noah Hiles and Andrew Destin. Noah, thanks so much for joining us here in the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll be checking back in with you Friday to see how things are going with the rest of this series. Thank you all for tuning in to the North Shore Drive podcast. Also, thank you to Adam Bittner for coming on the show. We'll talk to you again Friday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.